Accession number 16729, Phil Ridley, reel 4.
Mr. Ridley, reel 4. Were you discussing the intelligence section, Mr. Ridley? You have mentioned the spotting for a sniper. What other duties did the section carry out?
One of the most important ones we used to do was to suss out positions and draw maps and what have you, you know, and of where such and such an outpost was and what have you. Before we went and done any action, you understand, this is what we're supposed to do, right? And we one of our jobs was supposed to be to lay tapes. If there was an attack going to be put in, we had to go out and lay the white tapes out, and so that the companies or whatever used to come within the confines of the tapes. Map reading was a must and that sort of thing. And again, as I say, we had to accompany a sniper, that you had to go and hit, you had to sort of pinpoint his target for him. Like, you know, if this is what the theory was in the beginning, you know, what you were supposed to be, what the turning. But you see, who was teaching you these things was men after of the First World War, and they were teaching you things that never happened. There was no need for you know. I mean, the only thing they used to say, one of the things was you march in the dark, right? And use compasses and things like that sort of thing. This was relevant, right? But most of the things that they taught you didn't happen. I mean, it was more or less a waste of time.
It would be based on trench warfare and trench static.
Yeah, it was a 1914 mine that was, when it happened, when I was in France, I never saw one English tank. Never saw one English tank. I rarely saw an aeroplane belong to us, no mind anything else.
Did they give you any training to map read, for example? You mentioned map reading.
Well, the sergeant used to take English. He used to learn the legends on the map and that sort of thing. And used to, again, you've got to realise that this is taking place in a short period of time. You know, I mean, we were down in Shropshire, I think it was, at Kite Brook House, and most of the time they used to take you out and it was map reading, you know, and they used to take you and you're supposed to go and spot and what that was on the map. What was on the ground he found on the map, and vice versa, sort of thing. This is most of the thing was getting with fit, really. You know, I mean, we thought we were fit, you know, but I mean, we weren't. I mean, we were a lot fitter than what some of them were, right? But
you mentioned also drawing maps. That's pretty precise.
It's only people that had the hand. You know, I think there was one or two that was capable of you could draw a sketch, you know, like sort of, you know, I mean, a rough sketch, but you do, speaking for myself, you make a rough sketch, and you would put, say, approximately, this is 100 yards, and this sort of thing, like, sort of, pretty crude. I mean, there was no finesse, or no, there was no expertise or anything like that, like, you know, it was unbelievable. You got no idea. I mean, it was a good Boy Scout unit nowadays would have wiped the floor with them.
You didn't do anything like trying to ascertain the strength of the enemy in front of you?
Well, this was what this was. This all come into this sort of thing, but as I say, it didn't happen. You know, none of these things happen. It was. We were just. They just kicked around. Things happened that fast. To be quite honest with you, in the beginning of the war, even the officers didn't know what was going on.
Who was the intelligence section officer?
Oh, God, now you're asking. Better switch up. The officer, well, he was a very insignificant bloke. He was only about 5'3" or 5'4", and little tiny, wizened face with a little cherry nose. I think he was a solicitor, I think, in Civvy Street. And we didn't see a great deal of him. We saw more of the sergeant. The regular sergeant was he was of the First World War. And he had been in the intelligence section in the First World War. See? And he was teaching us what he knew of the First World War, which, as it turned out, it was irrelevant when it came down to the ground. And it was, speaking for myself, it was everything we'd done then was really of no use to us. And the same thing when we went down to Shropshire, they were teaching us things that was irrelevant, you know. Or showing with, and mostly was marching and getting with fit and this sort of thing, like, you know.
You fired off your course at Whitburn.
We fired the course at Whitburn. We were I think there were a couple of days or something like that, and then they brought me back to Newcastle. And from Newcastle they took us very late at night, one about midnight. It was early morning, and the ship were down to Shropshire.
Any idea what time this would be? Date?
Well, I couldn't tell you the date. No, I haven't got a clue what the date was. I haven't got a clue. You've got to understand that as far as I was concerned, everything was a dream. You know, everything was just something that I didn't know what it was all about. You know, I mean, we were really children. You know, I mean, even though we're 19 and 20, we're really children. You know, as far as them sort of things was concerned. I mean, how it's a wonder they didn't beat us before we got there. No matter what else, you know.
The 50th Division was supposed to be a mobile division. Did you have transportation? Did you have transport to get you around?
We're fit. Well, we didn't have a great deal of. We'd done a lot of boot marching in Shropshire and that sort of thing, like, you know. But nothing excessive. I mean, not like when we came back from France. When we came back from France, we were down 60s and 70s, you know. But by this time, we're a little bit more hardened, like, you know. But in them days, I mean, we weren't doing all that. We're doing a few miles, like, you know, maybe it's about 10 or something like that, and being very tired afterwards. And, but when we came back after France, I mean, we're doing 50s and 60s and come back and went to the dance, you know. Pretty
in Shropshire, where were you accommodated?
We're at Kitebrook Hall, which was a great big hall, which there was no lighting, there was no hot water. You had field kitchens for the make the club. We had beds of a type which was a double tiered, lattered with metal tapes, like, you know. You had a polyas. You had, I think, three blankets we had, and it was getting around Christmas time by this. And it was freezing cold, and there was nowhere to go. You just had to sit in your room with a candle and chat and talk. And one of the things was, they said that how many pubs is there on Gateshead High Street? You know? And of course we had experts in that, mind. I must admit, we were experts on where the pubs were. And they should start at the bottom of the Gateshead High Street, and they could go right up the top, both sides, and tell them the pub right up to Sheriff Hill, like, you know, with all the pubs on it.
What was the food like?
Pretty grim. It was adequate. I mean, and of course we used to get parcels from home, like, you know. But by this time we got, with us doing a lot of cycling, we were pretty used that sort of thing. We didn't bother with, like, you know. But what we had a lad from the Gordon Boys School there. Now, I remember my mum sending me a mouth organ. Why she sent me a mouth organ, I wouldn't know. The only thing that the mouth organ, I did have a mouth, you know. But I hadn't a clue what how to play it or anything like that. And I gave it to this lad called Heaney. He had been in the Gordon Boys School, which is the school where ex-servicemen's children go to, like, you know, and they teach them and they bring them up as soldiers. Like. And this lad, he had bright ginger hair, and like all ginger hair people, had this lovely complexion, like, you know. And I think he was about, I think he was either 16 or 17, I think he was. It was about 17, which was below the limit. He couldn't go out, like, you know. And of course he'd been brought up in this soldier school, you see, and he knew all the bugle calls. And my mum sent us this, mouth organ, and I couldn't play a mouth organ, so I go to this. We naturally were a lad called Heaney. Guess what they called him? They called him Sonia, you see, Sonia Heaney. And I give the mouth organ to Sonia, like, and he taught us all the bugle calls. That's why get sugar and spice, but he goes, oh, you know, that's all the ones, like, you know. And he taught how to do all the thing. And the night that we went away from there to come to France, there was about 10 of them that was too young to go. And I remember they were all standing on the thing, and the whole lot of them was crying.
Did you get in contact with the people in the area?
No, not really. We were right on there. We used to, well, I mean, it, with Ed Bob, Two bob a day, and you allocate your mum a shilling of that 2 bob, like, you know. And the nearest Morton in the Marsh was the nearest place, which was about 3 or 4 miles away from the place. And on a Friday we used to walk down to Morton in the Marsh and spend the right bob and come back and sit in the candlelight, and then for the rest of the week we just sat down and chatted and talked and carried on. And
you weren't invited into people's homes?
No, we only had, I'm only speaking for ourselves, mate, I don't know about the other lads, but we had one concert party, one, that came on Christmas, and we made them cry as well. We sang over at the end of the show, we sang over Abide With Me. No, I was standing on the stage, tears were down her cheeks. And,
hygiene, how did you keep clean?
With great difficulty. We had water, but it was always cold. There's no hot water. And I always remember one lad, Colonel standing on the steps of the Kaiprook House, and he says, any complaints? And this lad was standing, and he had blue beard, you know. He says, any chance of getting any hot water, sir, for shaving? Not a hope. That was the end of that, you know. But things were pretty grim.
And he said the food wasn't
Adequate, you know. I mean, when you're hungry, you'll eat out, like, you know. I mean, there was at least it was there, you know. It was slopping in, buying, you know, and that sort of thing. Like, you know, you had, if it was I don't think there was, I can't remember a dining hall there, that might have been. But I remember one Christmas, it wasn't in England, mate, but I got me, we got chicken for Christmas, dear. I opened the cooler stand up in Iraq. And we got chicken and, you know, the dressing light, and custard and some custard and Christmas pudding. And we also got a tot of rum.
We didn't get anything like that in England.
Well, but you see, you only got two halves of your Dixie, and you had three things to get. So what happened? You got your custard and your chicken and your thing, and you got your rum and your other half of your Dixie, you know. But that's another story.
And down in Shropshire, what training were you doing?
Map reading and marching and map reading and about two courses, I think, that's all. You know, I mean...
Who was commanding the battalion?
Again, I kind of tell you. I would, if somebody told us his name, I would... Because my friend Bob went as Batman with us. Batman. And he actually left the battalion just before we went to France. It wasn't Rutherford, was it? No, you better switch off.
In your training, were you experiencing anti-gas precaution training?
Well, you were taught how to use your gas mask and things like that. I think only once were we put to the test of putting it on and going through the tent that they had, I think. And they made you take it off before you come out, so you got your eyes work really, you know, to show you that your gas mask did work. But I think that most of these, you see, we were in a little section of our own. There was only, you know, we were in. You see, the pioneers was doing their things, and which was normal, like work, like making things and making toilets and things, you know, making latrines and things like that. Pioneers was doing the same thing. So there wasn't, all we was learning to do was maybe map reading and marching and what have you, like, you know. I mean, there wasn't really that much for not like the rest of the lads. They had their jobs to do, like, you know. I mean, they were making things, like them pioneers were making, building toilets or something like that, like, sort of thing. But we were just, as I say, they concentrated on maybe stalking or something like that, like, you know, like creeping around the place, like trying to get up in front. They used to have one bloke sitting with their back towards you. You know, and you had to creep up, and you had to touch him before you. But he was listening for you, like, you know, and that sort of thing. Which was, again, it was immaterial. I mean, we never used anything. I learned more after I left there than what I did when I. I mean, I'm reading the book at. The diary of one of the lads that actually took my place in the section up there, I got wounded, and he was more or less doing the same things as what we were doing, going spotting for guns and spotting for targets and things like that, like, and taking troops up into the and leading them into the gaps. But you see, we were never in an advance when I was there. I was always getting chased, you know. It was very depressing, you know.
Was the intelligence section part of headquarters company?
Oh, yeah. You got... we eventually got this this other little fella. He left. I can't remember his name. I think he went to headquarters to division or something like that, brigade. And he disappeared. And I'll have to try and remember some of the names one for you for the next time, like, you know.
So that winter of 1939-40 was pretty severe.
Yeah, well, it was hard winter, yes, and then it was worse when we went to France. We went to France, and the strange thing, when we went to France, I got on the ferry. I used to use the ferry. And it was terrific, of going across the channel. It was just like that all the time, like, you know.
Heavy storm.
It was.
Well, do you recall the journey from Shropshire to, where did you go from? Where did you leave from?
Was it Southampton? Or was it Liverpool?
Across the channel, it must have been Southampton.
Could have been Southampton, no. I wouldn't swear to that, mate. But, well, it must be. I know I come back to Dover.
So you'd move from Shropshire by train to Southampton?
We got on trucks, mostly trucks, aye. And went down there, and we got on the, I don't know the name of the boat, because it was the same one that I'd come back on. I came back out of Dunkirk on the same boat, and we went on to there, and it was rough. And the funny thing about it, I wasn't affected, and it was like that, and of course I was going round. You want some pork? You like a nice bigger pup? Oh no, you know, they were vomiting all over the place, like, and then. I went to bed.
What were your own feelings when you heard you were going to France? You must have known that some fighting might be coming up.
It was still an adventure. You see, it was still an adventure. It was something that we were doing. It was something that we wanted to join the army, and we were enjoying it. It was great. You know, you're out in the fresh air, you know, and we used to crawling in the muck and what have you, you know, and this sort of thing. I think I would have made a good regular soldier in the beginning, like, you know. But when it comes to courage, that's the question mark behind it, like, you know.
Had you been given embarkation leave?
No. Oh, just a minute. No. We did have a leave, I think, from when we were at Morton in the Marsh.
Your parents?
Before Christmas. I think it was about Christmas time. Or New Year time, you know, so half went to New Year and half went to Christmas, like, you know.
How did your parents receive you when you got home?
Oh, well, I mean, I was the only one, you can imagine, you know. I mean, I've told you about my dad being very, didn't know that he had a son, like, you know. I mean, he was very, he didn't. Didn't fawn over it or anything like that, but I told you about the little compassion he had when he lifted us into the bath. Like, there was another time when I came back from France, somebody must, because he liked his pint, like, you know, like, and he used to drink in the pub in the Felon, like, you know, and somebody must have seen us on the. Because I was missing for 3 days, like, you know.
Can we come to that later?
Yeah.
You've come back on your Christmas leave, and as you say, obviously, you're only one, your parents have received you. Would they be coming worried that you're in a dangerous situation?
Oh, well, I should imagine they were, but they never showed it. And I, of course, and that by the time I got back on that, I was one of the big lads, like, you know, I'm in the army sort of thing, and I play a brag and, you know, I play pontoon and all sorts, like, you know, lost all my money, but I learned, you know. And the Fondo was, I mean, they were the only one, I mean, you know. And, but I enjoyed it.
We didn't touch on that, actually. Was there a lot of gambling in the billets at night?
Oh, yeah. Well, they used to... Well, I mean, how far can you go with 8 bob, like, you know? Some of them didn't used to send anything home, like, you know. But, I mean, I learned quite early, you know. We used to go and play blind brag, you know. Because there was nothing to do at night. You know, I mean, you couldn't read and you couldn't write because there was no light. And you used to sit and you used to talk, you know, and it was mostly just conversation, like, you know, which, after all, this is what happened even when you were away, you know, sitting in tents at night and you were all going, you know, telling stories and what have you And of course, I learned very early on that it was a stupid thing to do for to pay your money and used to play. But I mean, my dad was one of them that curious of it, like a little bit, because we went, the big lads would come back from you know and leave late and we said, you want a game of cards, Dad? Playing blame brag, aye, right? Oh, hi, and so Jimmy, Bob, and me and. Jimmy wasn't there. Well, Jimmy would be there, like, but he wasn't in the army at that time. He said, "We're going down and play a blame brag, like, you know." And we were pointing at me. Of course, my dad used to pick his hand up straight away, like, you know. And that's not the way. He says, "That's the way I play a blame brag." You know? And he says, "You idiots were," he says, "it's throwing your money away."
Was it an offence in the army to gamble?
No, not that I know of. Not to know. It used to end up that the same guy used to get all the money, you know what I mean? It was all the money went into one bloke, like, you know. But most of the money went on Neil. Most of it went on Neil. When we're in Shropshire, like, in down there, I mean, it was on the scrumpy, you know, side and that, like, you know. Anywhere that get a drink, like, because the good drinking lads, like, you know, the Durham's, like, you know, still are. Any difference. Still are. After all these years, like, I mean, if you want to find a Durham looking for his pub, like, you know, it'll be there. But,
so you left for France, and where did you go to? You left from Southampton. Where did you land?
Cherbourg. Landed at Cherbourg.
What was your first impressions of France?
The first impression I got was that I was on the verge before of telling you that when we were on the boat, and the boat was in. And I went to sleep. I went, and halfway through the night, the sergeant come and woke us up. He said, "Have you got any English money to change into francs?" And I gets up in my bed like that, and that was it. I was absolutely ill. I just lifted my head like that. I was absolutely ill. And I told him where to go, like, in English. And I had fresh air, opened it. I opened the porthole, and of course it was about this far off the sea, like, you know, and I got all the water into the thing, closed the porthole, was soaking, and then the sergeant come back in and he says, "Get your gears on." I says, what's happened? I couldn't care less at this particular time. He says, "We've run aground." I says, "We've run aground." This is no fear of me putting any gears on if I've got to go over the side, like, you know, and I didn't put any gears on, like, but it would float it off, like. But when, as you get back to your question, what was it like, the first thing, when I got into Cherbourg station, I wondered why it was going up and down like that, you know, it was pitching, the whole station was going like that. And it was miserable, it was raining, and it was cold, and it was dark. And we went into the town, Cherbourg, and I says to Bob, I says, because Bob was, as I, my civvies, yeah, like, and I says, "Oh, I've got the picture, so I've got the big long queue." Oh, he says, "Look at the queue there." And he said, "And guns on." I says, "Well, we've got to go somewhere, to, you know, for the evening." I says, "It's cold. It needs to be warm in the cinema, like, you know." So he joins the queue, like, and he says, I says to one of the lads, I says, what's on? Like, what's the picture that's on? He says, what do you mean? I says, what's the picture that I stand waiting to see? He says, this isn't a picture, he says, this is a picture of the brother.